You're listening to Managing Leadership Anxiety, Yours and Theirs, a podcast offered in partnership with Missio Alliance. Each episode, we discuss internal and relational pressures, how they block effective leadership, and how we can move through them to a greater health. And now your host, Steve Cutts.
All right, friends. Hey, my wife Lisa and I, we're recording this on a Saturday, and I was just minding my own business this morning. You were out pulling some weeds in the yard, and the phone rang. So I answer it, and it's a telemarketer.
No, I just want to say all I heard on my end was, excuse me, sir, how old do you think I am?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a telemarketer calling on a Saturday, that's a little rough.
Yes.
But also kind of a pet peeve of mine, because courtesy is my thing, is when the telemarketer calls and then there's a pause, like because they don't really feel like getting to you. Yeah. And then why don't I hang up on them in that moment?
Because you like to stir them.
Actually, I like to feel like it's because of my courtesy thing, but it's possibly also some to do with that. And so, yeah, the first thing he says out of the gate is he's calling for senior citizen resources.
To which you replied.
Which I replied, how old do you think I am? And then he just hung up on me.
There was silence.
Yeah. Yes.
He wasn't quite in the jovial mood.
What a hard life I have. Yeah. And you're not going to get those phone calls for a little while.
A long time.
And maybe another few months.
Yeah, I'm a different decade than you are.
Okay. Hey, technically a solo episode, which means that we light our candle. We've historically had all manner of issue with our candle lighters. So today I brought one of each. I thought we could both light it together. Would you prefer the old school or the USB fancy lighter?
I do old school.
All right, so we're gonna make the sound into our microphone and then light it. In stereo, people. All right. Yeah, the old school's better. This little USB thing, I'm not sure.
But regardless of how, the point is that it gets lit, huh? And that we see light.
All right, folks. So for you, whatever it is, just the reminder that God is with us. Probably the number one lesson in anxiety management is simply that it tends to remove your awareness of God's presence. And that's because you're getting wrapped up in yourself. There's a lot of technical and theological reasons why, but if you can just get off the anxiety treadmill and just take a deep breath. So this candle lighting, it's just our tradition on the show, even though it's an audio show, just to remember that God is with us and God is as close or closer than this light that we see. So what are you going to do today or right now just to relax into God's presence? Okay. Hey, I'm excited. We're going to teach you a new tool today that's kind of new for us as well, but it's really born out of my next book. And I got book edits back from from the editor. I am publishing my next book with Zondervan. It's been an amazing experience working with them.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. Like really caring and really detail-oriented.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful combination. My mum passed away during the writing of this book, and they were tremendously pastoral to me and caring. But then Kyle, my editor, he's a fantastic editor. I really owe him a great debt of gratitude. So he has sent my book back to me with his edits. And then, of course, that means he's given me a ton of homework. not just his edits, but I've got some rewriting to do.
We're back to the early morning writing.
Oh, my goodness. Book writing is such a...
It's a discipline.
Yeah.
And it's an exercise, isn't it, in vulnerability. It's
very vulnerable.
And being misunderstood and how could things be done better. Yeah.
So let's just chat about that. Like sometimes I have a reputation, I think it's because of the way I come across and talk, that I always sound like I'm pretty collected. I remember in elder meetings, the chair of the elders pulled me aside and she's like, look, you tell me you're anxious, but I can't tell. So you need to give me some signs because you look really relaxed. Just tell our listeners a little bit about what it was like being married to a writer in that first few months when I was trying to turn that book in.
Well, it was all consuming, I think, for you and then therefore for the household because we have a deadline to meet. I remember whenever I would get up, you would have already been up for several hours and at work. Coffee was one of your dear friends, but it was hard to separate, right? Like the constant of the details of the book and how do I word this? And when is it just an idea versus the clarity of and how will people take this? It was hard to turn that off, I think, throughout the day. And there was also a lot of excitement, for for how it was coming out, and but a lot of frustration too. Like there was one chapter in particular,
the dreaded chapter 8.
Yes, chapter 8, which is also what I've learned in you is by writing, you're working it out yourself.
Right.
So many drafts, right?
Oh gosh, right. Well, and Kyle has sent chapter 8 back to me saying, yep, try it again. Basically saying it's not there. And boy, he's picked up some really helpful things that he's noticed. He noticed that I shifted my audience in chapter 8. He's like, you're not writing to who you were writing to before. So yeah, I'll be, I'm edited now through chapter 5 since he sent the edits back. So I'm almost at chapter 8 and here we go again. But it's true. Donna Miller says that you don't write to tell people what you think. You write to figure out what you think. That's very true for me.
Yeah. Here's something I think we've both noticed when we're focused on something big with a deadline, is that we get so involved in it and can forget to play.
Right.
Or and forget maybe to pursue our kids. You know, like we were just talking about this week how, oh my gosh, we have not planned treats or sneak outs or just fun activities to connect. And it feels like it's just another reminder that we can only be engrossed in something for so long before we have the balance of deep connection and playfulness.
Yeah, playfulness is so huge. And I have found this a huge struggle moving from a weekly deadline of a sermon to these like gigantic deadlines of a 60,000 word book or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But you got a big mum prize this week when Kaylee, it was fairly late at night and she got a hankering for some fast food.
Yep.
And we were all, I think I was in bed and you were either in bed or getting ready for bed. And then you're like, let's go.
That's right. Yep. Yep. She was processing through some stuff and the kind of thing she was processing through is best processed with either ice cream or salted french fries. So we went to In-N-Out, animal fries all the way late at night.
So good.
So good. So fun.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to give our listeners, and we're going to kick this one around, I'm going to give us a little hint at one of the tools, actually, honestly, one of the tools I'm most excited about in the next book. And basically what we have been noticing is the contrast between the way we talk to others and the way we talk to ourselves, and also related to that, the way we treat others and the way we treat ourselves.
Yeah.
Now, you must run into this all the time in your clients,
in yourself. My own life, right. In my clients, because it's part of all of us, right? And I think, honestly, I think, dare I say, especially Christians, especially those of us who may have grown up in the church or are leading, that there's a tendency to be others focused and how can I help somebody else and want ourselves to just be okay, you know, and not take the same time or attunement into ourselves and what's going on in us and what we need as we do with other people.
Yeah, it feels inherently selfish to take care of ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, selfish instead of honoring, right? Instead of honoring that the Holy Spirit lives in us and man inside of us is then something that we really want to attune to so that relationship can grow.
Yeah. So a couple of specifics from my end. When I think about the way I talk to others and the way I talk to myself, I used to, up until a couple of years ago, I used to call myself stupid all the time. Oh, that was stupid. Oh, you stupid idiot.
Yeah.
And whether it was joking or not, it was words I used toward myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would never call any family member or any friend. I wouldn't even call an enemy stupid.
Right.
But I'm very comfortable doing it to myself. So that was one thing I noticed.
Yeah.
And then probably at a deeper level, I think it's interesting the lessons you learn young that you take a while to put into practice. But I learned as a chaplain that the only way to help others was to be aware of myself. Because all the things that was going on under the surface in me that would bubble up. So it's the simple idea of what would it look like to treat ourselves the way we treat others.
Mm-hmm.
What are some phrases or words that you see in yourself or your clients?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll talk about myself. My inner critic is huge, has been for years. And the way it would show up is usually before we're doing something with people, whether we're having people over or putting on an event for people or whatever, I have this ruthless narrative of, it's not good enough. Why don't you just? Why didn't you? Why didn't you think about this earlier? Why don't you do better in cleaning, in cooking, in whatever? And it just is this never-ending spiral. And so without thinking it through, my whole body is just like in knots. And so then I'm thinking I've got to make up for lost time. And so my kids, growing up, they will all say, right, they hated being around me when we're getting ready to have people over.
Yeah.
Because I go into drill sergeant mode of what should have been done 10 days ago that I never asked them to do needs to be done right now, you know? And it became just an awful experience.
When did that change? That definitely shifted for you. When was that?
Oh, the inner critic. So I've been working on my inner critic and learning to attune to myself really for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Actually five. It started 5 years ago in counseling for myself to just be really aware of, for me, what was blocking permission, I think, to attune myself to myself was people-pleasing.
Yeah.
And so we did some big work with just my people-pleaser and the way that it would kind of link arms with the inner critic. And learned, you know, in the process that that people-pleaser and inner critic developed, you know, pretty young.
Yeah.
And actually really helped me do things well.
As a kid.
Helped me do things really well. Helped me be liked. Helped me look for ways to serve. In my church, my brother and I joked at one time that I was the golden child, right? But it helped me learn that, man, if I can please others and make them happy and make them feel loved, oh, the reflection I get back is good. And that's what it means to be loved, you know? And so usually these parts in us that want to call us moron or the not good enough in younger years helped us with a sense of identity and accomplishment. And so there's an honor, you know, at some point that we give to the inner critic, like you played a role in my life. And now there are some other parts of me that are grown up and there is a Holy Spirit and there are things I've learned from pain that I want to introduce you to, but it does help to just pay honor and attune to those parts of us that are hard now and at one point really helped us thrive.
The whole attunement thing is fascinating. Like, you've taught me so much about this, whereas when I first started teaching the inner critic, I would teach in a to be harsh toward it, fire it, tell it to go away. Mm-hmm. And you came to me, I don't know, a few years ago, and you're like, actually, it's going to be more helpful to ask the inner critic what it wants, invite it to stand down, have a posture of kindness toward it.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of the work you do with parts of self and IFS.
It's very compassion-centered and God-centered, right? It's bringing in the presence of the Lord and an understanding to those parts of us that feel so rigid and don't know what it looks like to have permission to relax into God's love.
Yeah. I'm even noticing a part of myself wanting to be playful right now, because if you have an inner critic and it's perfectionist, do you feel like your inner critic is good enough? A little paradoxical question.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that one.
We were talking about the Rick Astley paradox this morning. Right. Yeah, the Rick Astley. For those of you who don't know, you know, Rick Astley has the song Never Gonna Give You Up, Never Gonna Let You Down, right? Well, there's a movie called Up. The Pixar movie Up. Oh my goodness, Lisa, the first 20 minutes.
Yeah,
holy smokes.
Wrecks you. Yes.
Anyway, Pixar has a movie Up. So if you ever met Rick Astley and asked him if you could borrow his DVD of Up, he would never give you up. But then he would let you down, thus entering what's now known as the Astley paradox.
Yes. Oh.
I'm here all day.
Yeah, you are. Yes.
Okay. So a couple of things for our listeners. Paying attention to the way you talk to yourself versus the way you talk to others. Mm-hmm. But also, I noticed in my own life, I used to believe that living for Jesus meant denying myself, which meant ignoring myself.
Well, and there's a big no matter what the cost, right? Like, that was a huge slogan, no matter the cost, and that we tend to think it is to ourselves. And you know what? Yes, sometimes.
Right. You got to suck it up and do the hard and sacrifice.
And you depend on God's strength. Right. Yes. It's not that all the time we're like gazing at our belly buttons and inward.
In God's hot tub, just enjoying life.
Right. It's just that, you know, sometimes for the cost means that we are also nurturing ourselves, that we are making sure we're okay so that we are freed to connect more deeply with God. And that's the way that we allow him sometimes to enter our pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about like my friends like Dave, Matt, and Kevin, you know, some of my closest friends. I call them and check on them.
Yeah.
It's just something I do for my friends is I'll call them and say, how are you doing? But I don't check on myself. I just bear down and push harder. So as we're talking about like not just what we say and the difference between the harsh things we say to ourselves and the kind things we say to others, but also just some basic practices of what you do for your friends and your loved ones. Like you treated our daughter this week. You took her out on a treat. And this was a big struggle for me as I was writing the book. I was moving into the lie that just more work will do better rather than take a little treat time.
Yeah. You came up with you know, a tangible idea of what to do and write down that I love.
Yeah. So the official tool is, and this will be in the book for those of you, by the way, the book coming out in May now. I was a little late turning the manuscript in, and then Zondervan had some things too. So instead of it being released in February, it's now going to be released in May. So we've got some time.
Yep.
But coming up in the book, what we call it is put yourself on your conscious list of relationships. And it's such a weird thing. And so I tease in the book. I say, if you're at a party and someone doesn't know you and they say, hey, do you have a family? I'm going to challenge you to say, yes, I've got me. You know, it's kind of weird just being playful.
Right.
But we don't really consider that we're in relationship with ourselves. And what I wrote in the book is we've actually been in relationship with ourselves for a good while now.
Yeah.
And the other thought is, how can you deny yourself if you don't know what to deny? That's my idea, is like before denying myself was really stuffing. And then all that stuff ends up boiling over anyway. Like I get grumpy at telemarketers or something. But actually, if I'm aware of myself and taking care of myself, now I've got something to die to. Yeah, and I can actually be further on mission and more free.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things on that is noticing before doing anything.
Yes.
And that brings us to this weird diet called Wild Fit.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because we've been talking about putting yourself on the conscious list of relationships, and it reminded me. Was that 3 years ago? I think it was during
COVID. Yeah, you paid money.
I paid money.
Well, I tell you what, it was summer of 2020 because we wanted to launch a membership and we wanted to both learn. So we both joined a membership to learn about memberships and you joined a fitness membership.
Yeah, so we are not sponsored by Wild Fit.
Wild Fit, right. That's right.
But I will say I learned a lot from this. So
it was great.
Joined this online membership. And the whole idea is that you're, you know, in a forum with people and that we got teaching each week online. And then, there's a certain amount of food that you're going to give up each week.
Like 90% of all food, if I may.
By the end, we were pretty much eating kale.
Two aisles of the supermarket were basically, we digested so much kale.
Yeah, and never felt better, I will say, felt really good.
That's true, too.
We also had meat. There was more.
I had so much energy during that thing.
But the first 2 weeks, I remember, like, we're wanting to learn from this or wanting to get fit. And the first 2 weeks were like, don't change a thing with your food or your exercise or anything. Just notice. So we spent, and it was frustrating. I was like, come on, I paid money. I want to get in. I need to get, let's see progress. Let's go.
Yep.
And for the first 2 weeks, we're noticing when you reach for the chip bag, go ahead and eat the chips, but noticing what was it in you that wanted it? What was the feeling in your body? How did you feel after you ate two chips? How did you feel after you ate six? How did you feel after half the bag is gone?
Yeah.
How did you feel 20 minutes later? What was it like an hour later? And so what we're just doing is noticing what's going on inside of us, what we're reaching for, and what we're filling ourselves with, and what impact it had.
Yeah.
And it probably is the biggest thing that I will take from this 3-month membership is learning to just notice. And the reality is it's true for our emotional and spiritual and mental lives as well. That we want to just get in and fix it. But a lot of it is taking the time, don't change anything, just notice. When I don't choose to like check in with myself and just go do, or, you know, how am I? Am I okay? Am I in knots? Am I more relaxed? Am I aware of God? Is it all on my shoulders? What am I focused on? Yeah. You know, and just being able to understand how our patterns impact the internal soul.
One of the things I love about our Capable Life community, by which I mean our dear friends, Jimmy and Renee and some of our coaches, is how they come into our tools and they either improve them or refine them. They have their own stories. Mm-hmm. But I was chatting with Jimmy, you know, he was, I think, our last episode on this show. I was chatting with him a few weeks ago and just saying, I want to reconfigure the workshop I'm teaching, because I've been teaching it for 3 years now. I think I've done hundreds of workshops at this point, and I still think I'm trying to take people too far in 3 or 4 hours, you know, because I get so excited about all the tools that people can use. And Jimmy really gave me great feedback. He said, really, in 3 or 4 hours, if you just taught people nothing else than to notice their anxiety, that would change their life.
Yes.
And he was reminding me, because obviously we teach notice, name, and diffuse, but you and I have even experienced this when we do a webinar together. Oftentimes the team anxiously wants to diffuse, or they now anxiously want to have no anxiety.
Oh my gosh. It's the same with counseling. It's the same with webinars. It's the same with ourselves, that there is power in noticing.
Yeah. And especially I think in Western culture, we're so driven by efficiency and progress.
Yeah.
It was a great reminder from Jimmy. It's what you're telling
so
us.
So good. Yeah.
That even noticing anxiety gets you off the treadmill of it. And now if you can notice the way you talk to yourself and the way you neglect yourself. So we're saying, okay, put yourself on your conscious list of relationships. And then the homework we're giving people, we're still figuring this one out. But right now the homework is, okay, draw a little table in your journal and just list 3 things you do for your loved ones on one side of the table and 3 things you say for your loved ones. So we've already said, okay, I call and check on my friends. That's something I do. You take your daughter out for a treat. That's something you do. What's something that you say to your loved ones?
Yeah, I mean, and it can even be from neighbors, right? Making time to check in with neighbors. It can be the words that we say when someone's not sure going on. It's saying, golly, that makes sense. Like, of course, that would be hard.
Yeah.
And also, wow, how exciting for you. You know, like we're mirroring so much what's going on with our friends and joining in on, that would be helpful to be able to do with ourselves too.
Yeah. A lot of what you do in counseling is you create a safe space for people to be exactly as they are, and you make sure they feel seen. And then of course, as your family, we just get all, you do that for us as well. So then that would be something that someone could write on their list, is like, I want to create a safe space for me to be me, and I want to make sure I'm seeing me.
Yeah.
And I know it can feel for people, I don't know, like fluffy or maybe self-absorbed. Sometimes I've started teaching this in my more recent seminars, and sometimes during Q&A, someone is worried that I'm teaching some kind of self-help.
Right.
But what we're actually teaching here is a pathway to worship.
Absolutely.
Because if you can pay attention to yourself, you can actually now give something to God and worship, and then also therefore a pathway to mission. And we know people in really intense ministries that practice this, and it really is the way they stay working in, for example, foster care or anti-trafficking work, things like that.
Yep. And the difference between just self-help is that it's all about us, and we're trying to find it inside of us. And what we're doing is looking inward for the sake of being able to link arms and connect and integrate the Spirit of God.
All right, folks, so that's the tool for the week. Put yourself on your conscious list of relationships and learn to treat yourself the way you treat your neighbor. Jesus said, love your neighbor, but he had that pesky amendment, as you love yourself. Lisa, we got to be on this great Zoom call yesterday.
We sure did. So fun. Yeah.
Chris Willis, who most people have never heard of, but she's behind the scenes keeping...
A lot of things wouldn't happen with Capable Life if it wasn't for Chris Willis.
Right. She keeps me sane and my schedule sane. Chris was on there. Jimmy and Renee, that our podcast listeners have met. These are some of our precious friends who have been with Capable Life for over 10 years. Before it was Capable Life, before it was just, it was a class at our church. But also Dr. Chuck DeGroat was on the Zoom with us. And then Andy Gullahorn and Jill Phillips Gullahorn. So...
Yeah, everybody on the Zoom together, and we were brainstorming deeper this conference that we're doing October 2nd through 4th here in Broomfield, Colorado, and hearing people just share stories and truths that they're finding and permission as we look more deeply at this question of how can I experience from God what I most deeply believe in God.
Right, and it was so fun because we had everyone go around and just catch up, not only their own journey, but okay, what some of the ideas that you want to bring to the conference as we kind of finalize the schedule. Oh man. So folks, if it's not too late to join, you can come join us in person. You can join online. For many of our listeners, the schedule doesn't line up, but that's fine because you can join on demand. You can get those videos later. But what I love about it is, okay, we're doing some trauma tools, some parts of self tools, but we're also bringing, of course, some systems theory, but also like art, music. We're building some intentional experiences. I love what Renee said to all of us, where she's like, I'm really making sure that my keynote has practices during the keynote that you can do to experience God like in real time.
Yeah, we don't want to drink from a fire hose. We want to drink water and then really notice how it settles.
Yeah, so we're calling it a conference, but it really is designed to be an encounter.
Yes.
Ideally.
Yeah.
And we're bringing more keys than you need because we know that different people are unlocked by different tools.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I think if I remember, we have 8 keynote sessions. We have a couple of panel discussions where we can kick it around, but we also have times of music, Andy and Jill, incredible singer-songwriters, but also no slouch in these tools, Jill being a marriage and family therapist.
Absolutely.
Andy being quite an Enneagram guru. Okay, so this is the Unlocking Faith Conference. You know, in the show notes is where you can learn more, get tickets. Let's see, any final thoughts on putting yourself on your conscious list of relationships? Just trying to think for either of us.
I think in all of this, there's just, there's an invitation.
Yeah.
How's that? It's like you've received an invitation this week and you have a permission slip.
Oh, I like
that. That is signed by God that says you have permission to be aware of what's going on inside of you. And guess what? I'm right there with you.
Oh, I like that. Permission slip from God.
Mm-hmm.
What if I were at least as blank to myself as God is? And I guess we'd add, what if I were at least as blank to myself as I am to my friends and the people I love? All right, folks, we'll look forward to catching up next week.
For more resources, visit stevecusswords.com or missyoualliance.org.